You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, September 7th, the Dude, Where's My Carvel edition. I'm Gabriel Roth, an editor at Slate and the father of Eliza, age 6, and Leo, who is 3.
I'm Rebecca Lavoy. I'm a podcaster in New Hampshire. I am mom to Henry, who's 16, stepdaughter Lily, who is 17. My son Teddy is 15, and for the next 2.5 weeks, I have a wonderful German exchange student that I am sort of a foster mom to, named Moritz, who is also 15.
I love that Moritz is included in the roundup of your kids.
We are going to try to include him literally maybe next week. We'll see if I can drag him into the studio with me to do a little Q&A.
We will attempt to get some Moritz content for all you fans who've been wondering about this new character who we've been sort of teasing. Look out for some Moritz content over the next couple of weeks. But today on our show, we have a question from a listener who wants to know how to handle other kids' responses to her own son's Down syndrome, and another whose husband is better than she is about taking time for himself, and who weirdly is not mad at him about it for some reason. As always, we will also have triumphs and fails. We'll have recommendations. And on Slate Plus, we will weigh up the burden of the ever-increasing back-to-school supplies list. And Rebecca will hopefully give me some advice on how to cope with that. Carvel Wallace won't be with us this week because he's on assignment, but he'll be back next week. First up, though, we have triumphs and fails. Rebecca, boy, do I have a fail. What do you have?
I think you should start with your fail first. It sounds like you can't wait to get it out.
All right. Well, so listen. One of the first times I ever appeared on this show, in the Dan Coyce, Allison Benedict era, I came on to talk to Slate Plus listeners about triumphs and fails, and I had my triumph was I had successfully completed the first cash for tooth swap of my parental career, and I felt really pleased with that because it was so easy. She's asleep. You tell her that some magical being is going to come and give her money in exchange for this part of her body that just fell out, and then you go in and you stick your hand under the pillow, you exchange the one for the other, and then boom, you are now a member of like the parental elect. You know what I mean? You're now, like, I remember being a kid and my parents would do that stuff on me. I had no idea until later. And then you're like, oh, now I am being the tooth fairy. I'm actually being the tooth fairy. Well, we've lost a lot of teeth over the summer. Eliza went through, I think, about 85 teeth since June. Her entire mouth has been replaced like 6 or 7 times. And over the course of this time doing all of this tooth fairy business, I got sloppy about it. Like I forgot to do it, and then I had to rush in and do it in the morning, and like, oh, you just didn't find the coin, and it just went on and whatever. But then she lost one. It was a big one. It was a front one. And I snuck into her room to exchange it last week. And I was like, she had just gone to sleep a little while ago, but she was out and I wanted to go to bed. And so I'm just going to go in and do it. So I go in with some quarters and I reach my hand. I sneak into her room very quietly. I tiptoe in. I reach my hand under her pillow. I leave the quarters. I find the tooth. I slide my hand out, and I'm just about to start tiptoeing away. And she opens her eyes and looks at me and says, "Gotcha."
I love it. She Nancy Drew'd you.
She, like, I don't know how long she'd been on to me, but she didn't just ask. She'd never brought it up. She just, like, she was like, "No, I'm going to bust him." And she 100% busted me. And now she doesn't believe in Santa Claus either. And she's bringing it up in front of her brother. And the whole thing is just a catastrophe. If I had waited a little longer, she would have been really out. But she was faking it because she is too smart for me now. So that's the end of my career as a tooth fairy, at least for the older one.
So how old is she now?
She turned 7 in November. So,
yeah, that's about when life on the street starts to catch up with your kids for sure. Yeah. I mean, 7 to 10, depending on the kid and their level of maturity. But have you had the talk with her about not ruining her brother's life by letting him in all these secrets?
She already knows the issue. Like, she brought it up. She was like, and what about Santa Claus? And me and her mom were both like, no. Like, you can't see me in the studio, of course, but I'm frantically waving my hands up and down with my palms facing down in the universal sign for like, no. So she gets it. It's just a question of how much she wants to fuck with him and by extension us, basically.
Right. Yeah. And if she is, I don't know, I actually don't necessarily think this is a fail. It just sounds to me like your daughter is smart and laid a plan and executed it well. And that's a good sign.
For her to triumph, I have to fail. That's just the law of the jungle.
But yeah, the issue is, can you collude with her in such a way around Santa Claus and so forth that it will be fun for her to keep the secret from her brother and not a tool that she hangs over your head to bribe things out of you. Like, if you don't let me have this, I'll tell my little brother that there's no Santa Claus kind of thing.
You're saying read her in. Offer her immunity and read her in.
Yeah. Or make it like something she gets to be privy to that he's not. And that's like a special privilege of being the older one. I mean, that's a technique that I've seen work. I know it worked with my niece who successfully kept the secret from her younger brothers for a couple of years by like becoming part of the act. And then that my sister-in-law and brother-in-law had a very elaborate fake Santa for many years because their oldest daughter was like doing extra work to help them with the fakery because she was part of it, which was fun for her.
That's really good.
Yeah. So that's one technique. But if she really wants to screw with you and with him, it is a secret that she now has. So she's got power. The balance of power is shifting.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the only way that we can get her to play along is by offering her something, whether it's material or emotional or whatever it is, we're going to have to offer her something.
You are. She's got leverage.
All right. What about you? Triumph or fail?
I've got a fail. I think that I have talked many times in this podcast about my younger son's just inability to do his homework or anything related to just being on top of stuff. And this fail is mine and mine alone because of the way New Hampshire rolls out its school year where it's always like 1 week, like the last week of August, where there's only like 2 days. And then the next week is always Labor Day week, where there are like 3 days, because then they had Friday off for some reason. And this coming Monday, they have off for some teacher preparation, you know, professional development thing. So they have like 3 weeks in a row of shorter than 5 week school days. And so as a result of that, even though it's the second week of school, we are only on our fifth school day. And 5 days in, I already have no fucking idea whether or not Teddy has any homework and or is falling behind in any of his classes because he's just kind of like right back at it again saying like, no, I don't have anything to do. And then I look online and I don't see anything. So I don't know. And I really hoped that I would have a brand new, clean, fresh start this year and it would be totally different. And his dad and I collaborated. We're going to be sending him to an after school program 2 nights a week to sit with a professional person who's going to help him develop some skills around tutoring and homework and stuff. And that doesn't start till next week, though. So I just figured I can do this. All I have to do is I have to 2 weeks where I have to just sort of keep it together. And both of them are truncated weeks. And I've already completely failed. I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea if he's pulling the wool over my eyes about not having homework. I'm hoping not and that he's starting the school year off okay. But I feel like a total failure. Like, how are other people able to figure this out with kids like this? And I can't do it. And I feel like a complete failure in this entire homework world with a kid who's just not good at you know, doing his work and keeping up. I don't know how to handle it. So
and
here we are again.
Teddy is how old? He's 14?
He's 14. He's now a freshman in high school. So there's no more, like, screwing around. Like, this is a pretty competitive high school. They don't pass kids because they don't want to deal with them anymore. The program of study is like pretty rigorous. You're kind of locked into a track, you know, throughout your time in school. The teachers all know each other because it's a small school. And this is really the time to sort of cement your reputation as somebody who's going to take it seriously or not. I frankly don't care if his reputation is not taking it seriously. I'm like, just do the minimum. Just like do the assignment, even if you like don't answer the questions with as long sentences as the teacher wants. Just do something. I mean, that's where I am right now. And I still feel like I just, for some reason, I'm not able to communicate that successfully.
How long do you think, like, you as a parent should be involved in protecting him from his inability to manage this stuff?
I'm kind of actually already over that, because at the end of last year, I just was like, you know what? If you don't care about the consequences and I can't make you care and your teachers can't make you care, I mean, I'm kind of over, I won't like sit with him while he does it kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I won't be like, show it to me. But I do just want to know, you know I do have a responsibility. I don't expect that teachers will, you know, everyone else is capable of just sort of looking at the assignment sheet that's online, by the way, and kind of knowing what's due and dealing with it and talking to the teacher if they're not going to get it in on time or whatever. I know that Teddy really struggles with some of that stuff just because of the way his brain is wired. But it's, for me, just the basic kind of like not feeling any consequences, not caring about them, and so therefore just not being honest with me about it stuff. Like, that's the part that really makes me feel like a failure. I'm like, there are almost no consequences to just telling me, yeah, I have homework, but I haven't done it. You know, because I am over that part of it. It's just the feeling like I don't even know whether or not he is behind or on top of it or not. That's the part that just feels really hopeless to me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, sure. It just seems like a job for which you might not be the person in the position to do it. I mean,
That's why we hired a tutor. Remember, we had the teenage life coach last year.
Yeah, I remember.
Who was a huge help, but he couldn't do it super consistently because he was a very busy teenager. So this year we're just...
Yeah, professional, you know, life coach.
Professional academic tutor teaching skills. It's expensive and we have to cut corners elsewhere to do it. But like neither his dad or I really want... And it sounds horrible, but we're just sort of like don't want to have any part of this anymore because we're both bad at it.
Well, yeah. And because it, like, when you're nagging him about his homework, then it's wrapped up in so much other shit. Like, the more you can professionalize this, like, it's his school, it's this tutor, it's not like mom.
Yeah, then exactly.
Maybe the easier it is for it to just be a, like, problem for him to solve rather than, like, his entire adolescent, whatever.
Fingers crossed, Gabe. Fingers
good
crossed.
Good luck. Good luck. Let us know how it goes.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Okay, time now for us to do the business. First, we would like to hear from you. You're going to hear some questions from listeners in just a minute. If you would like to be one of those questioners who will be asking questions that we will be responding to on the air, leave us a voicemail at 424-255-7833. It's the best way to have us respond to your questions. We love hearing from you and getting your voice on the show. I also would like to tell you about another Slate podcast. It's called Represent. The host is Aisha Harris. Represent is about representation in culture. Aisha talks to creators who are challenging standards in the media. Recently, she talked to Ian Jones-Corti about his new Cartoon Network show, OKKO. And her coverage of this season's Bachelorette recently concluded with an interview with Eric Bigger, one of the season's finalists. It's a great show. She's a great interviewer, and these are important topics. If this sounds like it's up your alley, check out Represent with Aisha Harris wherever you find your podcasts. Today on Slate Plus, Rebecca and I will be talking about a great article by Ruth Graham that appeared on Slate recently about the ever-expanding size of the lists of school supplies that parents are expected to round up before the school year begins. My kids are too young to have the long list of brand name stationery, but Rebecca will give me the word from the future and some advice on how to deal with it. If you want to hear that segment and another bonus segment every week on this show, sign up for Slate Plus. That's Slate's membership program where fans of Slate and Slate podcasts help support us. For just $35 for your first year, you help cover the cost of producing these shows, and in return, you get extended ad-free versions of this and other great Slate shows. The Political Gabfest, The Culture Gabfest, Trumpcast, Hang Up and Listen, and so many more. Plus, a ton of other great benefits. So, if you would like to support Slate and Mom and Dad Are Fighting, go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. That's slate.com/momanddadplus. Okay. We have now a question from a listener. Her name is Becky.
Hi, Mom and Dad Are Fighting. I'm Becky, and I'm mom to a 2.5-year-old son named Drew. He is a bright, very active, and incredibly social kid, especially with other kids. And he also happens to have Down syndrome. My question for you is about how I might best talk to other kids when I witness them commenting about his differences. So far, it's been really easy. When the kids are 2 and 3, the comments have usually been benign. You know, they're born out of curiosity. They're usually directed right at me. They're things like, why does he walk that way? Or, his eyes are funny. And I usually just smile and say something like, you're right. And then maybe I ask them a question about what else they notice. And then I make the point that, yeah, he's a little different, but he's also a lot the same as you, and he likes to play just like you do. And what do you know? We all go on our happy way. The thing is, that as the kids age, I'm sure this is going to get trickier and more political, especially when the comments start to take on a meaner tone or when they're directed at him or behind his back. You know, things like, you're weird, or worse, calling him the dreaded R word, retarded. What I'd like to know is, how would you want me to talk to your 4, 5, or 6-year-old if you weren't around, or for that matter, if you were, if I hear them making a remark like that? Thank you so much for all your perspectives and the work that you do. I love this show, and I get something out of every episode. Bye.
I just first want to say I love the way she worded this question. How would you want me to talk to your child or talk to you if you were around? I think that's a really smart and wonderful way to approach this, because this is a really tough situation, and I'm not sure how I would handle it in her position. I'm not sure I would handle it much differently when my kid gets older than she's doing now, just by saying, you know, he's different, but he likes to play just like you and me. But I think that what I would want my kids to hear from a total stranger, because some parents are very defensive about their kids being talked to by anybody in a way that's corrective ever. And I think that sometimes that's really about them and not about whether or not it's right or wrong to talk to kids. I would just imagine what you might say to a kid who was being mean to your child if he didn't have Down syndrome. I mean, I'm not sure the language has to be different. I think saying, you know, if you were to say to my son, you know what, that's really hurtful. That's not a word that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. They think coming up with the exact script is the hardest part, but I think even just the way that she's approaching it will really help. And I don't know, Gabe, can you think of what exactly would make you comfortable for someone to say to your kid, whether you were or weren't around? I've had some time to think about this, but I'm still kind of struggling with like an exact script. But I do think she's on the right track thinking of it even in those terms.
Sure. I think, first of all, if you can talk to the parents rather than the kids, I think that probably works better in most situations because,
Agreed. As
you say, number one, a lot of parents are jumpy about strangers correcting their kids, even when the correction is totally warranted. But number two, like, the parent knows how to deal with their kid, right? If my kid ever says something super obnoxious about another kid, if that other kid's parent goes up and tries to talk to my kid, you know, they can chew them out and they could probably scare my kid, but I might know how to persuade my kid a little better that, like, actually that's not the way you want to be, because that's certainly not the way I want my kids to be in the world. And of course, if I saw them, if I was told that they were talking like that to a child with Down syndrome, then obviously I would take that very seriously and would want to talk to them and make them understand the situation. So that's the first thing. If the parent is available, you could probably get better results by going to them rather than by, like, stepping in and trying to instruct a kid who you don't know and who might react in any number of ways. In terms of the specific language, though, and of course, sometimes the parent isn't going to be there, and then maybe you do have to step in and say something to the kid. I mean, some of it is some children are going to be assholes regardless of what you do, right? Like, you can't, unfortunately, protect your kid from encountering the R word, and you can't always impress upon another kid who uses that word why that's not a humane thing to say to another person. You're not going to win every single one of these things. It seems to me that the one that might or one thing that might stand a reasonably good chance of making some impact on a kid is to say, well, yeah, this is my son, and he's different from you. That's right. And he's different in a way that makes things hard for him sometimes. He's a great kid, but things are sometimes difficult for him. And he really needs kids like you to help him out or to give him a break. And to appeal to them, not as a, like, hey, what kind of a person are you? How dare you say something cruel and unkind like that? But more to assume that they're basically that they have basically enough compassion to feel sympathetic to someone who's in a difficult circumstance, and say, like, I'm sure you wouldn't want to. I'm sure now that you understand that things are difficult for him, I'm sure he can count on you to help him out, or at least not to get in his way. Can you do that for me? And some kids obviously are sociopaths, and other kids are not mature.
Obviously.
And other kids are not mature enough to understand the appeal, or will be frightened by an adult coming and talking to them, or just are trying to see what they can get away with, or not mature enough to have developed any even basic compassion. But some of them will, I think. I know a lot of little kids sort of like the idea of themselves as helping, or themselves as taking care of other smaller, weaker things. And so if you can point out to them that this is an opportunity to do that, that'll sometimes work. It won't always work.
How would you feel if somebody said that to one of your kids when you weren't around? And how would you feel if somebody approached you in the playground and said, hey, you know, your daughter just used the R word about my son, and I'm hoping you can talk to her about that later. Would you be defensive, or would you be horrified, embarrassed?
I would be mortified, and I would be very angry at her in a way that, like, I would have to sort of calm myself down before even talking to her. Like, I don't want my kid acting like that. I'm sure if she did act like that, it would be something that she had picked up from somewhere, and that she, whatever. I'm sure, you know, she's 6 3/4. She can do terrible things without a second thought. But, you know, I would be filled with anger that I would have to get under control before talking to her, really. But I would certainly, like, I would be glad to be told about it so that I could address it with her properly in a way that would hopefully help her understand that that's not the way she wants to be in the world. If I found out that someone had talked to her when I wasn't around, I would hope that they had done it in a sort of polite and understanding way. And I get that sense from Becky's question that she's not about to just come in and, like, yell at my kid and terrify my kid for saying the wrong thing. But certainly it would seem justifiable if my kid is making fun of another kid who has some difference like that. It's definitely justifiable for an adult to intervene.
Yeah, and I think the reason I like her approach so much is because she's doing what you suggest, which is to not assume that other kids are bullies and psychopaths, but assume that they heard it somewhere or learned it somewhere or just don't know. I mean, I think she wants to come at it from more of a helpful, constructive place. I mean, it reminds me of, you know, when Henry, I think it was in, you know, 5th or 6th grade. It was really a very socially tumultuous year in his class. The kids were, you know, it was like between the age of 10 and 12, whichever grade it was. And I was driving him and a friend, and they were talking about some stuff going on in their class, and they described a girl in their class as being a bitch. And I, like, pulled over the car. And I was just like, this seems like a good time to have a conversation about, you know, that word, and it's only used with girls, and why that word in particular really bothers me and really bothers a lot of women and a lot of people. And we had like a really, I thought, smart conversation about it that wasn't about me immediately thinking like, God, you're a horrible kid. I can't believe you said that. It helped that this was a child that I knew. And I think that if I were to be in that situation, if I were this caller, I would try to channel that, like pretend this is a child of someone I know, or you know, a child that I already know, because adults approaching you and admonishing you in public especially can be extremely intimidating, and it becomes all about that and not about what it is they're trying to say. So
yeah, I think that's right. I mean, presumably a lot of the sort of excitement and thrill of using an insulting slur like that about another kid, if you're 7 years old, then you know that that's not a word that you're allowed to say, right? You know that's a thing that the grown-ups don't want you to say, that you're not allowed to say in class, that your teacher doesn't allow you to say, hopefully your parents don't allow you to say it. But you can say it to another kid and you can get away with it, and that makes you feel big and powerful and strong. And you're 7 years old, so you're not big or powerful or strong, and you need every opportunity you can get to feel those things. And especially now there's another child who's different from you in a way that obviously marks them out as potentially vulnerable, and so now you really get to feel empowered and big and tough. And if a grown-up comes along and chews you out, then they can sort of put you back in your place, right? They can let you know that you're not actually big and powerful and strong. But all they're really doing is creating more of a need for that. All they're mm-hmm. doing is, like, the next time when there's no grown-ups around, then you really need to use that slur. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it may be that if you can say, like, hey, I know you don't want to hurt anybody, but maybe you don't understand. This is a word that people use to pick on weaker people, and that actually marks you out, not as a powerful person, but as somebody who is careless and thoughtless and hurtful. And actually what I need you to do is to be a big, powerful, strong kid who can help another kid who needs help. You can give them a way to feel empowered without being cruel. And that's probably more useful than like dressing them down and putting them in their place, I hope.
Right. I've always been kind of a wuss when it comes to confronting like teenagers who were mean to my kids when they were little. I've always just been like, okay, let's move along now. Like, hustled my children away. So I think you're braver than I.
Well,
I'm
not talking about teenagers. Maybe the teenager has a gun or something.
Maybe.
All right, Becky, thank you so much for your question. Let us know how all of this goes for you, and good luck. We have, I think, another question now. This one is from Fiona.
Hi, Gabe, Rebecca, and Carvel. I'm the parent of a toddler, Owen, age 2.5, and I have a question about the balance of responsibilities in the household. I love my husband. He's great, but he's much better about prioritizing time for himself than I am. I'm kind of a homebody. I like my house to be organized before I start working on sort of the fun stuff. Whereas my husband is great about taking time to do things for himself, like going on hikes that are 7 hours long. And I know these are good for him, so I'm always supportive. But the way this always works out is the weekend rolls around. I'm taking care of all of the house stuff while my son is napping on the first day of the weekend. And then by the end of the weekend, I'm exhausted and haven't gotten any break.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's not my husband's fault. It's totally in my lap. But at the same time, as a homebody, I don't quite know how to fix this. With a toddler who, when I'm in the house, is all over me. So any tips on reorienting that balance of responsibilities? Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, first off, is she in fact quietly furious with him?
If she's not, she should be.
May well be that she should be. But is she actually? Like, is the subtext of this question, my husband is a selfish asshole?
No. I really do think that she... I think it's honest, and I know that only because I asked a similar question during a fail segment when I first started on this podcast. I talked about the fail being I felt like a
laundry.
Nag.
Your thing was around laundry.
Yeah, or just always having to just like ask for every step of everything, like, you know, and I, at the time, you know, that was honest, but, you know, I think she's being honest. I mean, if she is quietly raging, she doesn't know it yet, and she might know it after we talk about it, because Carvel kind of talked me into agreeing that what I was actually feeling was like a lot of loneliness and anger over this issue. Because that really is, I mean, she's being very, very generous and optimistic the way she describes her husband, saying it's not his fault. It's not this.
That he goes on 7-hour hikes. Jesus right. Christ. What is the last thing I've done that lasted 7 hours? I have no idea what it is.
I think anybody is allowed to and should be able to do that if that's a priority, but there also does need to be an acknowledgement if the price of doing that is that you are not shouldering an equal amount of work. You need to figure out a way to build that into, you know, take the 7-hour hike if that makes you feel good and it's good for you, but say, hey, don't do all the housework while I'm gone for these 7 hours, please. Like, if I'm doing this, I also want to do this, this, and this, and this, and help out. Maybe they just never had that communication, and that's why she's saying it's all in her lap. I mean, that's certainly sort of where I was. I feel like I have had that communication, but, you know, I don't know. It's really, really tough. I don't want to go on a limb. I don't know this couple. They sound very nice people.
Go on a limb.
I don't want to say he's being selfish, but he's certainly being... he's certainly blind to the burden this is putting. If it's not selfishness, it's a little bit of blindness to what it's costing her and what it's costing their family when he has all that wonderful balance in his life and she has none. I mean, there's a blindness there, if not outright selfishness. I mean, that's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's well put. I think whether out of, you know, big-heartedness or timidity, she hasn't sort of confronted him with this as like, this is actually a problem and we have to change the way things are set up in order to address this problem, right? You can say that without being mad at him. You can say this is a problem without saying you're a jerk, but you can still say like this thing where you go off for 7 hours on a hike and it's great for you, and then meanwhile I'm at home and I have to get all the cleaning done before I can do anything else, and then the kid is all over me. This is not a sustainable situation, and so we need to strategize together about how to address this situation. I think the strategic solution is pretty straightforward, and it begins with like her blocking out some time during which she's neither with the kid nor tidying up the house. And that's not a thing that's just going to happen by default, because her default thing to do when she has a minute around the house is to clean it up. So there's a few ways that you could like make it actually happen. The obvious one is she needs to leave the house, and she needs to say, okay, here is a 3-hour block on Saturday morning when I'm leaving the house. And, you know, I don't like leaving the house either. I like my house. My house is great. But if my wife and I have negotiated some time for each other during the weekend, then I will take a book and go to a cafe and, like, drink a cup of coffee and have some lunch and read a book. That's literally the best thing that happens to me on the weekend for 3 hours. And she can do that. She can take a book, or she can take an iPad and watch TV, or there are any number of portable entertainment options at this point. But, like, get the heck out of that house, see a friend, or be by yourself if you enjoy being by yourself. But like build in some a period when it's impossible for you to either be taking care of the kid or be cleaning up the house. And then the husband's 7-hour hike and the nap time and the cleaning up and all of that can fall into place around that, but make that the inflexible part of your weekend schedule.
Right. I mean, I think it does help too. You know, one of the things that I do now that I wasn't doing back when I was expressing all this frustration months ago on the show around this is at the beginning of every weekend, you have like your master list of all the things you're hoping to accomplish on that weekend. Some of them are like must do's, like we have to go grocery shopping because there's no food. And then there are, you know, it's sort of tiered. So there's like that, there's weeding in the garden, there's, you know, vacuuming, doing the laundry, whatever. And you make your master list at the beginning of the weekend, and it's somewhere very public. it becomes clear that it's not, I have to do all these things. It's all these things have to be done, right? That just helps communicate it that way, like the weekend to-do list, not Rebecca's weekend to-do list. And then, you know, the frustration I have with Kevin is that he will do anything, but literally won't think to do any of those things unless explicitly asked in real time. Because if I ask him a day before, there's an excellent chance he'll forget or get caught up in something else, you know, and so forth. And, you know, then I end up turning into a shrew, like I said earlier, that's like, all I asked was this one thing, you know, whatever. But if there's an explicit public list of the must-dos and the hope-to-dos, it becomes something that everybody owns and that both people in the couple own, I hope. And if somebody is willing to walk out the door, and that's kind of like the environment that's been set up and that's the agreement that's been made, and someone is willing to walk out the door for a 7-hour hike and also not be willing to commit to do a bunch of stuff on that list, then you can explicitly call that person selfish, especially when there are little kids involved, you know, because just the transactional work of getting little kids through their day, that's actually work. It's not fun. It's not relaxing. It's boring. And you add the house stuff on top of that. And it's just, there's just so much. And I'm not going to tell this lady that she's not right to want things to be neat. I know that for a lot of people, that does bring a sense of peace. They don't feel like they can leave their house without a made bed. Like, I've never been one of those people, but I know that that is a thing. That's a kind of a Zen thing that some people have. So I'm not going to tell her to not do that and to not feel that way. But it does help when you make your huge to-do list and you do realize there's the worst case scenario. If these three things don't happen on this Sunday, isn't so bad. Like, if I don't do the white load, like, we still have some t-shirts we can wear on Tuesday morning or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Making that physical list really, really does help. And it also does send a signal that, like, this belongs to both of us, not just me.
That's really useful for both of those reasons. I do think, like, it's, there are people for whom if the entire list, whether it's on paper or stored mentally, if the entire list hasn't been completed, then they will not take any time to relax. They won't read a book. They won't drink a glass of wine. They won't, like, they'll have a social engagement with friends because that's a thing that exists on their calendar, but they won't just, like, sit down and read a book or watch TV or something like that. And I urge Fiona, the caller, to do a little bit of mental rejiggering to allow herself to take the first hour of nap time to do something that she likes to do, even if the house is a mess.
Yeah.
Because then you can pick up the house once the kid is awake. It'll take a little longer, but you're not going to be, like, relaxing during that time anyway. Just take that hour.
Put it on the list. Put it on the list of things to do.
Put that hour on the list. Exactly. Put it at the top of the list. And then cross it off.
Yeah. It'll feel good to cross it off.
Yeah. All right. Good luck, Fiona.
I'd love to hear back, though. After
I'd like to hear from the husband. I want to know why the husband doesn't have the kid with him on the 7-hour hike.
This may never have a... If he's anything like my husband, who is, like, unarguably, everyone who meets him agrees, a super sweet, super earnest, very helpful, very nice guy, it probably has never occurred to him.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's an excellent chance that none of this has ever occurred to him.
Totally.
I don't want to speak for him, but there's an excellent chance that that's the case.
Pack the kid off with your husband, tidy up the house, and then pour yourself a glass of wine and turn on the TV. That's my solution. That's my solution for you, Fiona.
Hey, Karen Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right. Time now for recommendations. Rebecca, what do you recommend?
Well, I'm going to tease maybe some future content with this recommendation, which is that if your child ever has an opportunity to host a foreign exchange student, do it. Don't let the things that you're worried about, like the things I was worried about, keep you from doing it. Our exchange program in this German school, this German class with this German school, it's a pretty light load. It's like 3.5 weeks. And then my son is going to go to Germany at the end of the school year. So it's not like it's a 6 month or year long thing. And there were a couple of meetings about it last school year where we sort of were deciding whether or not to become a host family. And some of the issues that I had were, you know, Kevin and I both work. And the kids that live with us have sports and stuff after school. So how is this German student going to be entertained or taken care of in the hours where everybody's busy doing other things? Another issue I had was, you know, do I have to alter, you know, what we're cooking, making, doing? Do I have to make fun plans for every weekend and every weekend day, you know, because this kid is coming? And the German teacher who's been doing this for, you know, 30 years was like, don't worry about any of that. It's all about these students just learning to see and getting the experience of living with an American family. And part of that means sometimes both parents work. Part of that means sometimes the parents are super controlling and don't let the kids eat whenever they feel like it. He's like, it's whatever your family does, just fold this kid into the rhythm of your family. So it has worked out so beautifully. Our exchange student, Moritz, is very sweet. He's quiet. He's a little bit reserved. He's definitely self-deprecating. But the nice thing that he's brought to our family is this sense of how we live that we're now thinking about because we talk about it with him. He asks us questions about, you know, do we usually eat dinner at this time? You know, do you cook like this every night or are you just doing it for me? And then the kids get to answer the questions and sort of them acknowledging the things that make our life special or different or unique or weird. The thing that came up at dinner last night was how much the kids swear in just their casual conversation at the dinner table and how much we don't really care about that. And, you know, I a couple of times I caught more. It's just like raising an eyebrow. And I said, you know, do your parents, do you like use a lot of bad language in your house? And he's like, nope. And I was like, well, you know, not every family is like this. You can feel free to go home and tell your mom that it was weird. And when Henry comes to visit you, like, you have to remind him maybe that, like, you guys don't do that, but he'll probably won't. But the kids have also been really polite. You know, my kids have been helping Moritz make plans with his German friends. They've been really thinking about the way they spend their time. They're both, the first couple of days were like, after school, Moritz, do you know which bus to get on? And then Henry was like, you know what, I'm going to adjust my plan so I can make sure to give you a ride home and show you where the bus is. And it's just, it's kind of bringing out the best in them, you know, having this kid to host and kind of be responsible for in school, out of school all the time. It's just, it's really been a wonderful experience. And plus, he's also making us some noodles tonight. So I'm looking forward to that as well. So host an exchange student, if given the opportunity, don't let the dumb hangups you have about do we have enough space in our house? You know, will a kid be entertained all the time? Let all that go and just do it because it is a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Nice. And pretty soon you too might be living the dream of having a German teenage boy cooking for you.
You never know.
Famously, never know. The greatest cuisine in the world is prepared by German adolescents.
Famously.
I have a weirdly similar recommendation, actually. My recommendation also is not for a product this week, so there will be no Amazon affiliate links on our show page. I recommend a sort of junior version of that, which is if you have a younger sibling when they're really little, have them help take care of a baby. Leo has been spending this little interim week when, like, the summer vacation is basically over, but his school has not really kicked in yet, and he's been with a nanny who is also taking care of a little baby. And so he's been going over to this house. I've been dropping him off, and he's been hanging out with his nanny, who he loves, and this little baby. And apparently, he just really likes playing with her, bringing her toys, showing her things, helping her when she cries. He, like, gives her gentle little touches on the arm to try to make her feel better. And I think it's from being the youngest all the time. I think it's very empowering and satisfying to him to now be the big kid. And to get to be the one who, like, I mean, this goes back to what we were talking about in response to the question about the boy with Down syndrome. I think kids intrinsically enjoy and are satisfied by, like, taking care of smaller, weaker things. And that's a thing to, like, cultivate. And if you have a younger sibling, try to put them in a situation where they're the bigger sibling for a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's good for them and they love it.
Yeah, they really do. I've had the same experience with Teddy on lots of occasions, and he loves the rare opportunities he has to not be the youngest one.
Yeah. Great. And that's our show. If you have a question that you would like us to address, give us a call at 424-255-7833. Tell us what you thought about our advice this week on our Facebook page, facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. This show was produced by Benjamin Frisch. Carvel Wallace will be back next week. For Rebecca Lavoie, I'm Gabriel Roth. We'll see you next time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.